Morning.
Morning.
So this is the third talk that I've given on intimacy, and probably the last one for a while. In my first talk, I talked about intimacy and attachment. And I talked about the kind of the misconception that some American Buddhists have that attachment, when it's an openness of the heart and a bonding with someone else, that that's negative. That in fact, from a Western psychological point of view, that's what growing up is all about. Developing attachments that we can depend on, heart connections that we can depend on. And that's what adulthood is all about, too. Often there are holes, and we cover them up in other ways. So anyway, I don't want to give the first talk again. So that's the first talk. But then I said there are also kinds of attachment that get in the way of that. Attachment to thinking, to trying to put an image out there of who we are. And I talked about control in my second talk, how trying to be in control really is an attachment that really prevents our feeling of intimacy with each other and with the world around us. So today I'm just going to give some, well, not exactly random thoughts. They were random a week ago, and they've been coming together slowly but surely into a cohesive, coherent whole, so you can all get enlightened along with me. So intimacy, the words that are so often used in Sanskrit and Chinese and Japanese, citta, heart-mind. Shin, heart-mind. Bodhicitta, awake heart-mind. Shinjinming, heart-mind inscription. Trust, heart-mind inscription. So it's interesting. Sometimes the translation is mind and sometimes it's heart. But if you read enough translations, you see that they're using both, heart-mind. And I have a Tibetan guy who's lived in our basement for years. Stopped in for a month and he's still there. Which is cool. And Nuang is a Buddhist, Tibetan Buddhist, obviously. And he talks about his practice, and then he talks about mind. And he goes like this when he talks about mind. Well, for us that's hard, isn't it? But it's heart-mind, it's citta, it's shin, a natural openness and friendliness. My heart went out to him. I took her into my heart. Receptive, letting in, and going out. Receiving and giving. Giving and receiving. So Suzuki, my first teacher, said, the eye is just a swinging door. Just a swinging door. If we keep the door well oiled, giving and receiving, giving and receiving. Just like a healthy heart, a healthy heart mind, right? Flowing, naturally flowing. But we keep it well oiled with our zazen, with our practice. Because it starts to get a little creaky. Starts to want to close down. Or maybe stay wide open when it needs to actually close down. So we might say to myself, if I feel like this, since I'm supposed to be the Zen teacher around here and I'm really pissed at Paul, if I feel like this, there must be something wrong with me. I can only accept myself if I live up to my standard of how I should be. I won't say that, but that's what I feel. If I do that, I'm shutting down. right? At that moment, I'm shutting down. And so I need to just come back to oiling the door a little bit with my practice. With my generosity, with my generous practice toward myself and others. So, since we all have heart-mind, since we all have Buddha nature, why would anyone want to hurt themselves, harm themselves? Since, as Buddha supposedly said, the Dharma is good in the beginning, good in the middle, and the good in the end. Since we're unconditionally wholesome, just as we are, even though that's the case, we do hurtful and destructive behavior. We get lost and confused, and we develop patterns of hurtful and destructive behavior toward ourselves and each other. We just do that. It's the human situation. But through meditation, we begin to cultivate unconditional friendliness. It's not that we think unconditional friendliness. You can think that, and maybe that helps you some for a while, but then it becomes very conditioned. So it's better not even to worry about thinking it, but just do your zazen, do your meditation. It takes practice. And we have intro to meditation upstairs, and some of you have done it. Most of you have done it. Some of you have led it. And it's four, a series of four times it's done. And what's it? What's meditation about? It's only about stopping. That's it, stopping. Stopping doing, stopping holding on, stopping trying to think good thoughts, stopping trying to get rid of bad thoughts, stopping trying to achieve. Oh, achieve. I shouldn't be wasting my time. I'm spending this 30 minutes sitting here before the talk. What am I doing? Thinking. Bad. And we shut our heart and mind down instead of open up to the generosity that's here, right here. Stopping looking for something to distract us, stopping trying to get away from being with ourselves, stopping arranging our experience so that it measures up to some idea of what our experience should be. Our experience should be something different than it is. That's a kind of a weird idea, isn't it? Because this is our experience. So stopping. Stopping manipulating. Stopping screening anything out. And then this natural feeling of friendliness comes up. I don't know where it comes from. I don't know. You don't need to know. It's a natural manifestation of heart-mind, of Buddha nature. A basic goodness. Beneath all the stuff in here, all these defenses, all these rationalizations, all this pretense. It's not even a sentiment. It's just an openness. Just an openness. Like a swinging door. Like a swinging door. Swinging door doesn't even know it's open. Just swinging. Receiving and giving. Giving and receiving. Pretty cool, huh? Pretty cool. So we don't even have to like what we feel. Just let it be. Just let it come in and go out. You know, if you just completely let it come in, it'll go out too. If you just completely let something wonderful go out, it'll come back in pretty fast. Ever notice that? If you let it go, the wonderful thing, pow, comes back immediately. That's our practice. So the more I let myself be, the more I can be with you guys and let you guys be yourselves. And maybe after I've been teaching Zen for another couple lifetimes, I'll really be able to do that. But maybe not. It doesn't really matter. All I have to do is oil the door and appreciate that it swings. And it creaks sometimes while it swings. That's okay. That's a human situation. For all of us. So loving kindness circulating throughout our system. No longer these blockages and clogged areas that shut us down. A little bit of clogging sometimes. That's okay. Just being with it. Just being generous. So Vimalakirti Sutra says, Bodhisattvas generate the love that is a refuge for all living beings, the love that is peaceful because free of grasping, the love that is not feverish because free of passions, the love that is non-dual because it is involved neither with the external nor the internal, the love that is imperturbable because totally ultimate. Well, that's cool, but that's wonderful. But don't get too carried away about that and try to live up to it too much, because you'll shut down, your heart will shut down. You go, yeeks, I can't do that, yeeks. So our neurotic, self-destructive patterns are forms of basic goodness that have gotten stuck and gotten twisted. And they come out in a twisted way. But that's it. That's the Buddha nature that got mixed up and twisted. And the heart sort of got clogged. It's the same blood, though. Same blood. So the Buddhist psychologist John Wellwood tells this story. A little girl with an alcoholic father sees his unhappiness and wants to make him happy so that she could experience unconditional love flowing between them. Unfortunately, out of her desire to please him, she also winds up bending herself out of shape, disregarding her own needs, and blaming herself for failing to make him happy. As a result, she ends up with a harsh inner critic and repeatedly reenacts a neurotic victim role with the men in her life. Although her fixation on trying to please is misguided, it originally arose out of a spark of generosity and caring for her father. So as kids, we did the best we could. The mind of a child has to dream a way to get along in a world. Get along with the world. She did the best she could. So if we know that we did the best we could and we're still carrying some of that stuff around, then we can be compassionate. Can we? We can be compassionate. We all did the best we could. I did the best parenting I could, but I'm sure my kids have issues. I'm sure they have issues with me. How could they not? They have places that they need to heal. And that's just the human situation. So to be intimate, first we need to be on friendly terms with the raw and tender feelings right in here that come up right in here. That's why Nuang wanted to hear when he talked about mind. I said to him, Nuang, you sure you mean mind? He said, yes, mind. He went like this. Opening our hearts. If we can do it with ourselves, we can do it with others. If we can't do it with ourselves, we can't do it with others. We can't. But we can. We can. So Rilke says, for one person to love another, this is the most difficult of all our tasks. He isn't suggesting that it's hard to love initially and have loving kindness. What he's suggesting is it's hard. Intimacy is about keeping loving, keeping loving, keeping extending, day by day, week by week, month by month, year after year. That's intimacy. After we've had some failures, you want to give up. You want to give up. You want to try someone else. And we try someone else. We'll try something else. And we do this. We do this to protect ourselves, don't we? Or maybe we just want to shut down. Yeah, I decide I'm going to be with him or her for the rest of my life, so I'll just sigh and look the other way when he or she says something or other. Yeah, we do that to defend ourselves. That's okay. That's okay. We defend ourselves because we're vulnerable. We're vulnerable. Just like when we were kids. We're just as vulnerable now as when we were kids. It's just that we're pretty good at covering it over. Pretty good. We learn to defend ourselves. We learn to survive. And to do better than survive. But we can see this with all within the big heart mind of our Zazen. We can see this. And that's the beginning of freedom. So, when I met my first teacher, Suzuki Roshi, although he wasn't called Roshi then, Sensei, when I met my first teacher, he didn't want to be called Roshi. He said, Roshi means old person. Don't call me that. So we never called him Roshi. Because he didn't want to be called old person. But I actually like being called an old person. So I don't know why. What was I saying? Oh, yeah. When I met my first teacher, I was just attracted to him immediately. I felt his generous spirit. I had been reading Alan Watts over and over and over again about Buddha nature and heart mind. Then I met a man who just seemed to radiate that. Wow, that's cool. I want to practice. I want to do this. I'll do this. I'll practice. So that went fine for a while. That went fine for a while. But after about 3 years, a bunch of other people started coming to the Zen Center. Lots and lots of people. And then we had a Zen monastery in Carmel Valley. And more people coming. Didn't seem like Suzuki was paying attention, much attention to me anymore. I thought, all that Buddha nature that I saw there, I don't know if it's the real deal. He's avoiding me. He's not giving me time. I used to get to drive him everywhere. I used to get that breakfast with him. So I didn't know it at the time, but my pattern, I had a pattern in here. We all have these patterns. My pattern was that my dad, from my point of view, was much more loving toward my sister than me. Much more loving. And here all these women come to Zen Center. First of us were just men and older women, but all these younger women were coming to Zen Center. And he seemed to be just quite enamored of them. Well, can you blame him? Can you blame him? You know. But I blamed him. And I didn't even know this had anything to do with my pattern. But it did. Big time. These patterns constrain us. They constrain us. So I didn't want to sustain the intimacy because I thought, oh, I'll get hurt again, just like I got hurt when I reached out to my dad. And my dad turned to my sister. I don't want to do that. But I stayed with him anyway. Well, I don't know why exactly I stayed with him. Sometimes I say the reason I stayed with him is that there weren't any other Buddhist teachers around then. I don't know if that's really why. There weren't any, except for Tolong, who was a Chinese Zen teacher who pulled open his robe and showed us how he burned himself with moksha, this incense, and that was part of a priest practice. I thought, well, no, really, don't. And only ate certain vegetables and didn't have sex. Oh, no. It was Suzuki. Right. So anyway, we can see these things. We do these things. We can see them in a non-judgmental way, don't you think? We were vulnerable as kids. This is how we protect ourselves. And we're still vulnerable. So these patterns that are somewhat dysfunctional now, although they're somewhat functional, but if we see them, we don't have to be preyed on by them. So that emotional and psychological wounding took place when the mind and body was soft and impressionable. We needed to get our needs met to fend off the threat of being hurt, manipulated, controlled by all these big people around us, rejected by all these big people around us. So we developed these patterns to protect us. And they still have some functional value, but they also can cripple us, can really clog up heartland. So if we can see them with generosity and love and just give and receive the outflow of the blood, the inflow of the blood, the clotting naturally just sort of, breaks up in our practice. That's what our practice is, our spiritual practice. So I want to talk about three impediments to intimacy briefly, because I'm watching the clock. One, dysregulation of emotion. Dysregulation of emotion. Emotion means to move, from the Latin to move. Chemical signals move us to do something. And negative emotions make us feel vulnerable and devalued, so we want to do something. So I'm angry at Paul, and Paul's sitting there where Matt usually sits. I'm angry at Paul. So I don't know what I do. Maybe I put him down, or I put myself down, or I go have an extra chocolate bar. I don't share my chocolate bar with him. Or I overwork, or I drink, or something. The less regulated our emotions are, the more difficult it is to detect emotional cues from self and others, right? Because we're caught in the emotion. We don't see the cue. But in our zazen, we can begin to see the cue. Begin to see it. But it happens so fast. The lizard brain, the amygdala, it happens so fast. Before we know that we feel vulnerable, we're motivated, we're moved. Emotion moves us to blame, to deny, to overreact, to overeat, to over this, to over that. Before we know that we're ashamed, we seek relief by lashing out or running away. But zazen is about partly seeing that stuff when it comes up. Now, when I say that, I don't think you should be looking for this stuff in your zazen. If this stuff doesn't come up, fine. Don't look for it. But if you do enough real, I don't like to say hard sitting, but real wholehearted sitting, it will come up at some point. It will just come up. So emotional dysregulation, we learn to regulate the emotions, but not through conscious manipulation, through this simple process of just seeing them and being with them and not needing to react to them, because we open our hearts. We have to open our hearts. And secondly, self-obsession. We get obsessed, and that closes down our feeling of intimacy. If I'm obsessed with how I'm, well, I'm doing as a Zen teacher, I can't be intimate with you, because I'm just thinking about, how am I doing with Steve? Did I really respond to his emails? Did I do it in a generous way? Or maybe I should try doing it differently next time. Well, if I get obsessed by that, I can't be with him, because I become narcissus. I don't have to get any psychological diagnosis. We're all narcissistic to a degree. We all get caught by our image. Narcissus got caught by his reflection in the water. So caught that he couldn't move anymore. He turned into a plant. We become crippled, unable to move. Just, how am I doing, you guys? How am I doing? I'm not doing good enough. How can I do better? Of course, we do want to do better, but if we're always looking at the other person as if we're in a mirror, we don't have any sense of connection, any sense of warmth. And third impediment is fear of loss. The avoiding heart never learns to regulate emotion. In early childhood, abandonment meant what? Death. We weren't stupid as kids. We knew it meant death. So the baby brain learned to go like this and protect ourselves. And then we become chained to the baby brain. First, we have to acknowledge the baby brain. Even at 74 years old with 83 years of meditation, baby brain, take care of the baby brain. You need to cry, cry. Just be with it. So in bare awareness of our meditation, we see. We don't always see, but sometimes we see, and we stop the cycle just by seeing the cycle of helpless, dependent, destructive behaviors. And the heart begins to go stronger, but not stronger in terms of more rigid, just in terms of that swinging door, giving and receiving, giving and receiving. Dogen refers to this as Buddha nature sometimes, as one bright pearl other times. So we have these layers of covering of our heart that melt down in meditation. Trungpa Rinpoche says, the chaos that takes place in your neurosis is the only home ground that you can build the mandala of awakening on. Oh, I think he was sober when he said that. He must have been sober. Sounds pretty sober to me. Pretty sobering to me. We do. Pardon?
Could you read it again?
Sure. The chaos that takes place in your neurosis is the only home ground that you can build the mandala of awakening on. And you know, English was his second language. But English was Hojo-san and Suzuki Roshi's second language, too, and they said some beautiful things because English was fresh for them. They didn't know how you were supposed to use it. So since they didn't know how they were supposed to use it, they put words together in some really, sometimes surprising, wonderful ways. When we do this, then we're ready to do what Rinzai says. Let the person of naked red flesh come forth. Let the person of naked red flesh come forth. Allow these unworked, hidden, messy parts of ourselves come out. Breakdown is necessary for there to be breakthrough. I want to be careful about this because I'm not talking about. I'm talking about a breakdown that happens naturally. Doesn't have any relationship to breakdown as we usually think about along the mental illness continuum. It's just a breakdown that takes place when the coagulation begins to stop and the blood begins to flow naturally. That's all it is. But it's easy to abort the process of unclogging heart-mind once it's started. To run away or to do spiritual bypassing, to cover over our wounds and increase our feeling of deficiency. And spiritual bypassing, again, for those of you who didn't hear my last talk or my talk before where I talked about it, is putting down relative truth, putting down relativity. Here's a guru whom I won't tell who this person is. Know that what appears to be love for one another is really not divine love because the other doesn't exist and the other's otherness is an illusion. Well, that's one side. But the other side is emptiness is form. Form is emptiness, but emptiness is form. We're separate. We're separate. We're also conditioned. We're separate. We're completely separate. And if we cover our separateness up in some belief or some attachment to oneness, that's not so cool. That's not so cool. So that's why Suzuki said to us once in a retreat, "You've discovered that form is emptiness, but not that emptiness is form." I thought, what does he mean by that? Because I didn't understand what this form emptiness stuff was about. So I went and talked to him, and he said, "Well, you mess that you're not me. You wanting to be me, but you can never be me. You're you." That's what I was saying. And I thought, well, why didn't he just say that? Why did he talk about those forms? But you know, those Japanese teachers, sorry, maybe American teachers too. Maybe so. So personal intimacy is hard work, because we are two, we are three, we are. There is a gap, there is a gap. But when there's a real experience of connection, there's a spark that flashes out, fills that gap. We know that, we feel that with others. We feel that. It's pretty wonderful. It's wonderful. It's alive. It's warm. But then we get to know someone. We get to know someone, and that spark seems to diminish. Seems to diminish. My past wounds come up to the surface. It's no longer fresh, and so my past wounds are projecting on my relationship with that person. And can I just see that and be with it? Gosh, out to it, honor it. That's the way I protected myself when I was 13. Well, I'm 74 now. Do I really have to protect myself with Ted that way when I was 13, now that I'm 74? Well, maybe I do for a while. But maybe if I just do my zazen a little more wholeheartedly for another 3 or 4 years, I won't have to protect myself that way. And I can feel some genuine intimacy with him. Maybe so. Maybe so. Possible, don't you think? So as I get to know my heart mind better, it becomes more natural for me to do this. And I don't need to pull back. I can aerate my wounds in my bare awareness. So I fell off my bike a couple of weeks ago, and I hurt myself. I got a wound on my knee and a wound here, and I had to go to the urgent care, although I waited for 2 days to go to urgent care. That's stubborn, isn't it? What kind of pattern is that? Who did I learn that from? My dad? My older brother? I didn't have an older brother. Us boys, you know, 74-year-old boys. Oh, it's nothing, Linda. Oh, but I got to go. Linda, I can't get up. She said, well, I told you it wasn't nothing. Go to urgent care. Go to urgent care. So, but my wound here, my wound on my knee, not so bad. My wound on my elbow, pretty bad. Had to put, what do we put on our wounds? I had to put, what's that stuff that we, I've just blocked on the word, I'm sorry. It's a kind of salve that has, antibiotic cream. I had to put antibiotic cream on it because they said it was infected. And then I said, in a week it didn't get better, I'd have to start taking oral antibiotics. See, I let it go that much, that long. So I put my antibiotic cream on it 3 times a day, but then I also had to give it air. We have to give our wounds air. Our wounds don't heal if we just keep them locked in. our zazen. We're giving our wounds air with our zazen. But we can't give them too much air. If I didn't put a little bandage, I had to put my bandage over. Linda helped me 3 times a day put my bandage over. Not so tight. I needed air, but enough so that I wouldn't get re-wounded. We don't want to get re-wounded again. We got wounded enough as a kid. So we got to be careful, even with the people we like, because we don't want those wounds to fester again. So how can we aerate in our zazen, but at the same time still protect ourselves from not foolishly getting wounded? That's our lives, isn't it? That's our lives. Only most human beings don't do meditation, so it's harder for them to do this. So anyway, now it's finally better. But if I just done what my wife said, I would have had a week less of suffering. Oh well, you know. Maybe next time. Probably not, but maybe next time. Probably not. So this is the middle way. Letting our wound just be here with us, but not foolishly running around and getting infected by other people who are gonna hurt us again. That's the middle way. Well, the middle way, nobody knows what the middle way is. We just, through our heart mind, we just sort of feel a way along. Say yes to our pain. And notice how we were hurt in the past and how we learned to build walls, but not be caught by that and not diss it. And I've been talking, maybe in my last talk before, about surfing. I learned to surf as a kid. I learned to surf in pretty turbulent waters. And first I was really scared, but I went back every day. After a while, when I would look out on the Santa Cruz coast, out into the water, what I first saw as being turbulent and uncontrollable waves now looked really cool after a while. But it took practice. It took practice. So in our sitting, a big wave of emotion comes in. It takes practice just to be with that wave, just to let it pass through. A series of thoughts come through back and forth. Over and over again, little waves, continually, they don't stop. Can I just get back on my board? Just be with them? Maybe I'm going to fall in the water again. Well, then I should just give up zazen. No, we can get back on our board. Just surf them. Oh, here's a big one. That's okay. I got knocked over again. That's okay. You get knocked over. Well, sooner or later, you learn to surf. And to serve. You learn to go with the soars and the crashes and not be bowled over by them. Just be with them. So last time or the time before, I quoted Surfing Master Kurt, the Hawaiian surfing master. We are all one. Nobody is better than anyone else. And the ocean will right size you, because it doesn't matter if you are 7 feet tall or 2 feet tall. Whenever your feet leave the sand, we all become a single mind, body, floating free. A single mind, body, floating free. So, the waves as the ocean. The waves of the ocean. Our thoughts is not something we want to get away from, but just a manifestation of heart-mind, because heart-mind includes mind. Our feelings, just a manifestation of heart-mind. And gradually, we develop some balance. We can surf, because we've got our Buddha nature. Whether we say it's here, or here, or here, it keeps us steady. Maybe not always joyful, but just steady. So there's a quietness and a calmness, and regardless of how big the waves are, how big the surf is. And then we get a sense for what Dogen and other teachers mean by intimacy. So that's what I want to say for today. And I will be glad to entertain any questions or comments from anyone. Yeah.
Some of what you're saying is reminding me of going into the unknown, and that whole, because you said once you know someone, so you've created an idea about them, but if, you know, there's another realm of it's unknown. We haven't created it yet. The uncreate, that's for them.
That's right. Yes, that's right. Good.
Yeah, so the difficulty I love to hear voice, and I keep hearing in the voice that it's not as big a deal as the mind is making it. You know, we're creating the same pattern again, and it's really a big deal. But yet I can hear in your voice, it's like, it's not as big a deal as your mind is saying it is, you know. And I agree with that, but I also think there is this stepping off the 10-foot pole, you know, stepping off. That takes a lot of courage, you know, and an intention, or, you know, and I'm just wondering your thoughts about that.
Well, everything you say I agree with. Mm-hmm. It takes a lot of courage, and it takes intention, but the lot of courage can be just a little bit of courage, just a little bit of courage, just to put your board back in the water, to put your butt back on the cushion, just a little bit of courage. It doesn't have to take a lot of courage. A little bit of courage is a lot of courage if you don't get wigged out by it and just do it. So we think it takes a lot of courage when we're trying to change ourselves, to live up to some idea that maybe you heard in my talk, but there's no special idea here. This is just opening to heart mind, opening to natural give and take of life, and that takes some courage. And sometimes we do need to not open up because it's more courage than we're ready to have right now. Well, we shouldn't fake it. Heart mind wants to flow. The blood wants to flow. If we just stay with it gently, just stay with those small waves gently, after a while we can handle the large waves, and they don't even seem large. But it happens on its own, and we can't rush it. But it takes intention, and intention has to be fed by some feeling in our hearts that yes, it's here. It's here. That's why I always hung out with my teachers as much as possible, because I could feel that in them. And maybe it was just my delusion, but that's okay. It's a delusion that really, really changed everything for me for my whole life. So that's cool, delusion, I guess. So what's your response? Is that okay, or do you want something, asking for something a little bit different?
No, I was just wondering, you know, your teaching on that, on intention, you know, because it's
Well, my teaching is to be gentle, mm-hmm. to be courageously gentle. If you're gentle, that's a wonderful kind of courage. That's the only way you're gonna aerate your wound enough so that it will heal, to be gentle. So with my arm, I had to keep it in the air, but I also couldn't move around very fast. And every morning here for a while, I just sat in a chair. And when I moved my arm, I didn't move it very fast because I needed to be gentle. And it healed. Heart, mind, heals. Raymond.
There's a mechanical malfunction with the clock about 7 or 8 minutes slow.
Oh, okay. All right. So it's about 12:02 then. So maybe time for one more. Anybody has one, or we could. Yeah, a couple more. I can do a couple more. Yeah. Larry?
Just a brief comment. I think sometimes this courage is a matter of overcoming inertia. I think similar to that. I find when I go up and down sometimes, personally, I have to overcome inertia.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, so Larry's saying that courage simply sometimes is so simple as just overcoming inertia. We all know this, that all you have to do is get up and do something. As long as it's not something harmful, get up and do it, and that's courage in and of itself. Especially when you're feeling really in a funk, you just do something. And that's wonderful courage. You just go to the living room and open a book, start reading it. That's courage if you're in a funk. That's great courage. It's gentle, though. Gentle. Thank you, Larry. Carrie?
I don't know. I have a wondering, maybe more than a question, because you were talking about like the feelings of like anger or if you had disagreement, those that come up.
Yeah.
Mine is like thinking about the opposite, love, feelings of desire that drive us to, right? And when you talk about intimacy, can you talk more about how, like, love, the desire, right, which we all, as human beings, we tend to seek for intimate relationship?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Kind of the noticing of that, where I've been toying with this idea of that love, that desire, that doesn't really need to exist to have intimacy with a person. It's more of a choice.
Yes. Yeah, so that's a good question. That's another talk's worth or two or three. I mean, it's a good question. It's an important question. Again, if we take this back to our childhood, and none of us got all the love we wanted in our childhood. So let's put the sexual side aside now. We didn't get it. It's just our parents did their best. So we're looking now for mates, for friends. To fill that gap. And the more we desire our friend to fill that gap without noticing that it comes from this pattern when we were a child, the more our relationship is brittle. But if I just see that, if I just see that my wanting to reach out to you is related to a feeling from before without psychoanalyzing it, I just feel it in here in my body, then I can reach out to you more easily and more intimately and with more loving, because I'm not trying to get something from you. I'm not trying to get you to fill this up. And sometimes I am trying to get you to fill this up. Well, then I just know this, and I'm just conscious of this, because these wounds never go away, and I'm knowing that. So I'm gushing to that. And I'm probably even sharing it with you. If I want to be intimate, I'm sharing it with you. And then we're dancing together. Maybe you're sharing something with me. When I share something with you and share something with me, we become more intimate. Anything more? Have we become more intimate? It's amazing how this happens, It's amazing, isn't it? It's like the thing we want to share the least with someone, if we're trying to build up intimacy, if we share that with them, and we do it in a heartfelt way, not in a da-da-da-da-da, intimacy increases. It just happens. Wow. Wow. Pretty cool that we have this capacity, don't you think? Thank you.